My name is Owen Brooks. I'm with the Oral History Project of Smith Robinson Museum. I'm doing an oral history project for the veterans of the Mississippi Civil Rights Movement. And I have with me today Ms. Brenda Travis. And Ms. Travis, before we start, I would like to ask you if I have your permission to do this interview.
Yes, you do.
Ms. Travis, we want to get an idea of your background, so we'd like you to start us off by telling us where you were born and your parents, what they did, your mama and dad, and we'd like to know if you have siblings, brothers and sisters. Start us off in that fashion, and then we will move on from there.
Okay, I was born in Macomb, Mississippi, to L.S. Travis and Isa Martin Travis. I have six
L.S. Travis.
Yeah, L.S.
That's dad?
As dad, yes.
L.S.?
Yes.
Okay.
You know how it is
L.S. Travis.
In the country, they usually name the
right, sure.
Initials.
No, it's just, okay. And your mom's name was?
I-C-I-C-I-E.
I-C-I-E.
Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N.
Okay. Was your dad originally from Macomb?
He was from Anitt County, Liberty.
He was from
Gloucester, I should
Gloucester.
Say. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. And what kind of work did he do?
My dad was a sharecropper.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. Okay, and mom, was mom from Macomb or from Gloucester also?
Well, she was from Liberty.
She was from Liberty.
And they moved to Macomb when she was younger.
Uh-huh.
Her mother moved her family to Macomb.
Did she work at all?
Yes, she did.
Okay.
She worked, well, we call it domestic work now,
okay.
But, and then she was also a cook.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And you were born in Macomb what year?
In 1945.
1945, okay.
Yeah, March of 1945, March 16.
You just had a birthday.
Yes, I did.
Okay. Now let's see, you have brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers.
Two brothers.
And four sisters.
Oh, okay. Four sisters. All still living?
No, my youngest brother was killed in 1975 in a train truck collision.
Uh-huh.
And my oldest sister died 2 years ago from diabetic complications.
Now, you grew up in Macomb, and you went to school. Well, can you remember the first school you went to in Macomb? The
yes.
Elementary school?
It was Universal.
Universal.
Elementary school.
Universal Elementary.
Uh-huh.
All right. And how many grades did you do there?
I did six grades there.
1 to 6.
1 to 6.
And where'd you go from there?
I went to Berglin High School.
From at the seventh grade?
At the seventh grade.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually it was called Berglin High School, and I guess it was what we call now middle schools.
Uh-huh.
But so I did middle school and high school at Berglin High School.
Okay, so you went 7 to 12?
Yes. No, I went 7 to 10 because remember the program.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
But I would have gone 7
right.
to 12. Uh-huh.
Gotcha. And your brothers and sisters all went to Berglin? Did they all go to the same high school?
Okay. My oldest sister initially started out, this was prior to them building Berglin High School. She started out a school in Fernwood, and they closed. Well, she completed Fernwood.
Was that a high school?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And
it doesn't exist anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore, no.
Okay.
the rest of us went to Berglund.
Went to Berglund.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Now, when did you become aware of what was going on in Pike County and surrounding area as it related to civil rights activity? Tell me when you really became aware of what was happening.
I really became aware, and at that time, it had nothing to do with civil rights.
Okay.
Okay. It had more to do with disrespect of my household, and if we want to put that in that category, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But I recall, well, there were a couple of incidents, and I guess most of our stories would be based around, you know, the Emmett Till case.
Mm.
Okay, so I remember that as a young girl. And then I recall my Mac Charles Parker as a young girl.
Okay.
And then there was an incident where my brother, my oldest brother, James.
Now, for the benefit of the folks listening to this tape, tell us who Mac Charles Parker was and how he came to his, he was lynched.
He was lynched,
yeah.
Yes.
Can you give us a little about that story?
Well, they claim he was lynched for, I believe it was wolf whistling at a Caucasian woman.
Where did this happen?
It was in the Macomb.
That was near you.
Yeah, it was near me.
Liberty or somewhere.
Yeah, it was near me, and I can't give you the city right now. I just remember the incident because of
what grade
the
were you
trauma,
in?
You know, just feeling traumatized
uh-huh.
by the witness of seeing this sight with this man with his neck in a noose and head hanging over to the side.
Mm-hmm.
That
you
was very traumatic.
Saw a picture of that.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. They jet usually expose
okay.
things like that the same way they did in Emmett Till.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I was probably around 11 years old.
All right, 55, 56.
Yeah.
That would have been around 1956.
I believe it was around 1956.
Okay.
And shortly thereafter, there was an incident where this sheriff, I remembered his name last night. I'm trying to remember it again.
Mm-hmm.
He barged into our home, and you know, during those days you didn't have locks on the doors or locks on your windows and stuff.
Was this in your county, in Pike County?
It was in Pike County.
Okay. What
Henry Cottrell. The
Cottrell?
Sheriff's name was Henry Cottrell.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead, tell us what happened.
Yeah. Okay, oh, I'm sorry. Henry Cottrell barged into our house.
Who's house?
My our family home, our
oh.
you know, the home where we lived.
All right.
And my brother was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother was there, and he snatched my brother from the bed. And my grandmother was inquiring of him, you know, well, what's happening? Well, you know, what's wrong? You know, he hasn't done anything. And he kept telling my grandma, shut up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking him to jail. But why are you taking him to jail? I'm taking him to jail, you know, and, you know, order her not to say anything more.
Mm.
So
did
they
actually take him to jail?
Yes, they took
yeah,
him to jail.
Took him to jail.
And I just remember, actually, at first I felt enraged because I thought this man was going to hit my grandmother. And I knew at that point, you know, when they took my brother away, actually, I was afraid that I would never see him again.
Right.
Because I had this imprint on my mind,
mm-hmm.
or in my head, about Mac Charles Parker and about Emmett Till.
Right.
And then they come and they snatch my brother up without explanation as to why they were taking him away.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
and how did you act? Well,
what was my reaction?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm, that's okay. My reaction was that I knew at that point, and I always said when I got old enough,
mm-hmm.
or when I got big enough,
mm-hmm.
I was going to do something to bring about change. I had no idea what I was going to do,
mm-hmm.
but I knew that I was going to do something.
So what did y'all do about your brother?
Oh, they took him to jail, and later that day, they released him because they found that he wasn't the guilty party.
He wasn't one they were looking for.
No.
All right, go on.
Okay. Let me just kind of regress a little bit. I was telling you about my dad being a sharecropper, and my mother was pregnant with me, and he was, I believe he said the town was Belzona.
Yeah.
Okay, and this sharecropper's name was Moon Mullen.
In Belzona. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And my dad had gone out to the field to scrape cotton, and this owner came out and told my dad that he should go back to the house to get my mother and bring her to help scrape cotton. Mm-hmm. My dad told him, well, Mr. Mullen, I can't do that because my wife is about to drop her load.
Mm-hmm.
You know, meaning she was about to give birth. Yes.
Good.
According to what my dad and mom said, Mr. Mullen became infuriated.
Mm-hmm.
He left the field to go get his gun to kill my dad.
Mm.
So my dad ran to the house. Mr. Mullen went in one direction and my dad went in another. Ran to the house to get my mother and told her, look, just don't ever, just leave everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't try to bring anything. We got to get out of here. And as they left, he told her the story of why they were leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he went on the road because Mr. Mullen had a bad reputation for killing black people.
Mm-hmm.
So he went on the run. He had to abandon his family and go on the road to try to save his life. Go on the run, I'm sorry, to try to save
his
life. This is my dad.
Mm-hmm.
This is my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it wasn't until much, much later years, many later years after Mullen died.
He stayed gone. Oh,
you know.
Mm.
After many years, after Mr. Mullen died, that, you know, he tried to reconnect with his family.
Oh, my Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And did that in fact happen?
My dad was reconciled with y'all.
Did he get back? Was he able to get back to?
Not right at the point that Mr. Mullen died.
Mm-hmm.
But he came. What was it in 81?
Mm.
He came in 81 to California, where I'd taken my mother.
Oh, so 72. You and your mother left and went to California, okay.
Well, no, there's another portion to the story, you know, and I didn't remember, I just said I wanted to kind of regress a little bit.
It's all right.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay, so I wanted to tell that story, to tell about the Führer and the fight within me.
All right.
Okay, I was saying that maybe I was predestined to be a civil rights activist,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the womb.
Right.
So, anyway,
I got you.
My anyway, now we'll move on forward. They released my brother later that day, and then I was saying that, you know, as soon as I got old enough or big enough, I had to do something to bring about change. And I started working actually outside of the home when I was 12 years old, and I, you know, I went to high school. I went to school and I worked, and I was a short order cook, and then doing domestic work, housekeeping, and babysitting and stuff like that, and you know, just suffering, you know, many, you know, verbal abuses. So in
let's see, you worked in private homes and you worked at where'd you cook at?
There was a place called, it's torn down now.
Okay, what's this?
But it was called Pete. We always call it Pete Wade's place, and he was the owner
restaurant
of this little restaurant,
mm-hmm.
and it was right downtown. As a matter of fact, it was called Kramer Town. But it was still, you know, part of Macomb.
And that's where you did the cooking?
Yes.
Okay. Now, and you were 12 years old when you started working?
Mm-hmm.
How was school going?
School was going pretty good. I was passing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't mean, you know, like passing with a D.
Yeah.
You know, I was passing like with B's and C's and
fairly
stuff.
Good, yeah.
Fairly good grades. Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about the big story. What led up to the school demonstration that resulted in you having to leave school? What led up to that?
Okay. I would go to church on Sundays, and C.C. Bryant, who was the president of the local NAACP, even though I didn't belong to his church, but at that time, people were not into denominationalism.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody went to everybody's church. It was a small community.
Right.
So everybody attended everybody else's church, and I recall on Mr. Bryant was a deacon at Society Hill, and on their Sundays, he would always encourage people to join the NAACP. So I recall going to Mr. Bryant's house one day after having worked in this laundry, this cleaner's, as a presser, and this woman verbally abusing me, and because I left a wrinkle in a shirt, and you know they call it cat faces.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so I left a wrinkle in the shirt, and she told me that if I didn't get this wrinkle out of this shirt, she would have mine ass out of here so fast, it would give me the swimming in the head.
This is a white woman?
This was a white woman.
Okay. And you were doing laundry for her?
I was doing laundry, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
So you know what?
Yeah.
I didn't wait for her to fire me.
You walked out.
I picked my little Sue satchel up, and I got out of there. And I went straight to Mr. Bryant's house. And the day that I went to Mr. Bryant's to join the NAACP was the day that Bob Moses came to Macomb. And Mr. Bryant said to Moses, when Moses told him his purpose for being in Macomb and what he wanted to do, Mr. Bryant looked and said, well, look, I'll turn you over to this young lady. You know, she's familiar with Macomb, and she can help, you know, take you around and show you, you know, you know, get you set up. So anyway, I didn't do all of that, but what I did do was I became involved in voter registration by way of, you know, going out and canvassing and knocking on doors and encouraging people to go out to vote. And you know, they set up the voting schools where they could train them how to pass the test. And so the most disheartening thing was many of the people that I had known for years and years, and here in the, you know, we were taught respectability when we were kids. You know, when you pass by, no matter how many times a day you pass by an individual's home, you always spoke to them if they were visible.
Right.
Okay, so many of these people would see us coming, and they would jump up and run into the house.
When they saw you coming.
When they saw us coming. And you know, and you can see them, you know, peeking from behind the shades and that kind of thing, you know, out of fear.
They tried to avoid it.
Well, you know, that was kind of difficult to accept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having been raised there, it was different had not I understood what the protocol was, you know.
Okay.
It was difficult to accept that, you know. It was painful.
Sure.
As a child, you know.
Right.
Uh huh.
For your own folks to turn their back on you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I felt that they would probably never get this program off the ground, and people would never be able to go and register to vote.
Right.
Because if you're going to run behind the doors and peek from behind the curtains and stuff, you will never get out to the schools.
Give you much chance.
Exactly, exactly. So then we went from voter registration to like a plan of direct action. And I recall Curtis Hayes, I recall Bob Moses, and I can't tell you exactly what the time period was. I recall Bob Moses having been beaten. I recall Curtis Hayes and Hollis Watkins going to jail. And I recall a meeting in which they were asking people, you know, telling people that these people had gone to jail and we would like to keep the momentum going. So we're going to ask, you know, who would like to volunteer to go to jail?
Volunteer to go to jail.
Yes. So then it was Robert Talbert, Ike Lewis, and I were the only ones who volunteered to go to jail. So they said go to jail because what we decided to do was to go to the Greyhound bus station, purchase a ticket, and wait inside to take the bus when it arrived. But they knew we were going to jail, you know, because if we went inside the Greyhound bus station, the part that says white only, that we were going to jail. And I think it had to do with the interstate commerce law.
Oh, okay.
Okay, where if you purchased a ticket,
yeah,
and I can't quote verbatim what it is that the law read or said, mm-hmm. you know, but that was supposed to be like a test for Macomb, and that's what we did. We went into the Greyhound bus station after purchasing a ticket mm-hmm. and attempted to sit down
in the station
inside the white only
section. Okay. And you and who?
Robert Talbert, Ike Lewis. Uh-huh.
Okay. And you?
Yes.
And who else?
That was it, the three of us.
Okay. All right.
So as a result, I spent 30 days in the Pike County Jail.
Mm.
And these were activities that were during the summer months. So after being released from jail, I went to our the local black high school.
Did you stay in the jail the whole 30 days?
Yeah.
Or did somebody get you out?
No.
Didn't get you out?
No, I stayed in jail for
you
the whole 30
days. Stayed in jail for 30
days? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, God rest her soul, there was another woman in jail with me, and she knew my family very well. And I noticed that they had taken her from the cell, and then when she came back, she was acting kind of strange. And she told me, she said, "I'm going to tell you something." And she said, "Don't you utter a word of it." She said, "Those SOBs tried to get me to beat up on you."
Mm. This is another lady in jail.
Uh-huh.
Oh, gee.
And so she said, they told me if I were to beat up on you, they would release me.
Mm.
And she said, "Girl, let me tell you, I thought about it. I thought about it real hard."
Mm-hmm.
She said, "But then I thought about your uncle."
Who was your uncle?
His name was Percy Martin.
Yeah.
And she said, "I thought about your uncle." And she said, "I knew that had I beaten you,
yeah,
Percy was going to kill me." So she said, "I decided I'd rather serve my time." And she did, you know, but I was grateful for her, you know, telling me that, informing me, because it was like being in a minefield and not knowing that I was truly in a minefield.
Yeah.
You know, I had to watch, you know, back, front, sides, and around and about me, and things that I could see and didn't see too. I had to look out for those things. So,
mm-hmm. So she refused to do that.
She refused to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then...
Then you got out of jail.
Then I got out of jail.
When you get out?
It was a latter part of...
Did you go home and tell your folks the story?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I shared that with them. Yeah, I shared that with them, and they had a good laugh about it. And this person, her name was Doris Peavy. And Doris was a friend to my older sister, and they had a good laugh about that.
Mm-hmm.
But after being released from the Pike County Jail, I went to enroll in my high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that point that I was told that I was expelled from school.
Oh, why?
Because of my civil rights activities. So,
they put you out of school?
Yes.
Because you had been to jail for demonstrating?
Yes. Yeah. So, some of the students who were waiting, I guess they had heard that I was going to be expelled.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were waiting, and I returned to school to enroll on the day that they were having assembly.
Returned to school to enroll on the day they were having assembly?
Yes.
Okay,
and there was, I recall it as being Carl Bird, but someone else was telling me it was somebody else. But, you know, I realize that I'm reaching that age now, so I may have the names mixed up and confused. But I recall him asking me when I came from the principal's office what happened.
Who was this person?
He was a student.
What was his name?
Carl Bird. Oh. Maybe Jerome Bird. Jerome.
Mm-hmm. And what did you tell him?
I told him that I had been expelled. And so then he encouraged me to come to the assembly, because they had a plan of action, I guess, and that was when they asked, I sat there and I listened, you know, to their announcement and listened to the principal speak, and one of the individuals got up and asked the principal why was Brenda Travis expelled.
Mm.
And he told them to told that person, and just as I said, I'm not calling names because I may have the facts mixed up, but not the facts, I'm sorry, the names mixed up, but the facts are correct. he told them to come to the office to see him after the assembly, but instead of the students going, or that person going to see him after the assembly, when the assembly was dismissed, students started to return to their classes, and other students decided that they were going to walk out, and what they did was go into the classrooms where many of the students had returned and encourage them to come on and walk out.
Mm.
So we all marched from the Berglund High School to the SNCC office.
Students walked out of the high school?
Yes.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. And we walked to, initially we started going down, and I didn't know the thinking of the SNCC people, but they said they looked up and saw this mass body of students coming down, so they had to decide
what to do
and how to organize these students, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they got us in groups and told us, you know, like to march two by two. We all call it double breasted. And we had determined that we were going to march to the Pike County Jail, but when we got to...
that was the destination.
The destination initially was to march to the Pike County Jail or courthouse, because they were right there together.
All right.
Okay. And as we were marching, The day was late already, and when we passed City Hall, we decided to turn back and go to the steps of the City Hall to pray. And as we entered the steps of the City Hall, one by one, we were arrested. And then finally, they saw that after, you know, once they arrest one, another one was coming up to pray. Mm. So then they just decided to arrest everybody. Mm-hmm. So they arrested all of us.
How many?
And
you remember?
You know, it was over half of the high school. And I believe it was over 200 students. Mm. Now, I know that there's a discrepancy there.
And they arrested all?
Yes. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yes. They arrested all of them. And some of the parents came down, and they were, the students were released into
the custody
of the parents. And there were other students who were older students who were arrested and charged with disturbing the peace and for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. And even me at 16 at that time was even charged with the delinquency of a minor, contributing to the delinquency of a minor.
You were charged with that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you just 16 yourself?
I was 16 myself. So after they arrested me the second time, they took me to, after, what was it, 2 days, I think it was, they took me to Oakley Training School in Raymond, Mississippi, which is the local reformatory school.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. And when they were taking me to Oakley, you see, they took me without a trial or hearing or anything the second time.
Mm.
Okay. And when they were taking me to Oakley, I inquired where I was going. Mm-hmm. And they told me they were taking me to see my attorney. Mm-hmm. So when we drove up on the campus of Oakley, and I got out and went inside of the administration building, that's when I was informed that I was at reformatory school.
Mm.
And this was without knowledge of my mother, without knowledge of my attorney. And there were several days and perhaps weeks before my mother had knowledge of my whereabouts, and the attorney as well.
Mm. And your parents weren't informed where you were?
No. They weren't informed until later where I was. And I recall in the reformatory school, there were a group of students who attempted to visit me in the reformatory school, and I saw the head. This campus is set up where it's, well, it's a co-ed campus.
Okay.
And they have the girls on one, had the girls on one side and the boys on the other side. And then they had the cafeteria somewhere in the center. Mm-hmm. So that morning, as we were going to breakfast, they would line us all up like little toy soldiers, and we had
this
to march over. This is at Oakley. We had to go to, we went over to the cafeteria and to have our breakfast, and I kept seeing these policemen, sheriffs or whatever, they were law enforcement with these dogs.
Mm.
And I started wondering what was going on, you know, just observing that, because they were very near the school, and I thought that perhaps some of the boys had ran away or escaped from the school or something. Little did I know that they were there to prevent
escape.
No, they were there to prevent my mother.
What?
And other students from coming to visit me.
Now, how many of you were actually taken to Oakley?
One.
You the only person?
I was the only person that was taken to Oakley. And I guess that was to make an example. I was the example. But the other thing is that I was the only minor that was arrested initially, because Bobby Talbert was, I think he was in his 20s, and Ike Lewis was 19 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the only one under age.
Mm. And you were 16?
I was 16, yes.
You were the only one arrested, and you were 16 years old. Is that right? Did I say that right?
No, you didn't say that right. I wasn't the only one arrested.
Well, you were the only one taken to Oakley.
I was the only one taken to Oakley.
Okay, all right.
Other students were arrested, but they had not been arrested prior to that.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay.
But you were the only one taken to Oakley.
I was only one taken to Oakley. And remember, I just gotten out of the Pike County Jail, I think about a week or so prior to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How long did you stay out of touch with anybody at Oakley?
How long did I stay out of touch?
Yeah, you were kept sort of isolated, and your folks weren't told where you were?
My folks were not told where I was until later.
What is later?
And I'm...
A day or two?
No, I think, as I said, it was several days, mm-hmm. and it may have been a week or two.
Oh.
Okay. Mm. And then when they found out where I was, then some of the students in Macomb decided that they wanted to come and visit me in Oakley. And as did my mother, you know, they all got on the bus to come to Oakley to visit me. And the law enforcement was there to turn them around with their dogs and guns and stuff. And it was only at that point that I was made aware of what was happening. Mm. And that was when I saw the school bus, I had no idea. Still, I could stand and watch and see.
Out the window?
Yeah.
At the training school?
Out the window of the training school.
And see what?
And I could see the bus.
The school bus?
The school bus. But I had no idea any of this pertained to me.
The school bus was it from Macomb?
The school bus was from Macomb.
And what did they do? Ride you down the school bus all by yourself to Oakley? Why did the school bus come down to Oakley Training School?
The school bus brought students from Macomb to visit me at Oakley.
Oh, they brought them down to visit you?
Yes. Ah. And my mother was on that bus.
Is that right?
And they turned the bus around.
Oh.
And refused to allow them to come and visit.
Mm. So the school bus had a group of students and your mom taken down. The bus took them down to Oakley to visit you.
Right. The bus was privately owned, by the way.
Oh, it was?
Yes. It wasn't, it didn't belong to the school system.
Oh, I was wondering about that.
Okay. It belonged to this guy, Fred Bates.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So they got money and paid him to bring their Volvo as a group, the students and my mother.
Hmm.
And I understand Mr. Bates, as a result of this, lost his license to operate that bus.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And the bus was turned around, never got to see you?
No.
Mm. But you could see it out of the window.
Mm. I could see it from the window, but I didn't know it was about me.
Mm-hmm.
It was after the bus had been turned around that the superintendent of the school of Oakley, his name was Mr. Elon, I believe it was Elon. Mr. Island.
Mr. Island.
Yes. Mr. Island had the matron of the school to bring me over to his house. And when they brought me over and they told me that that was my family and some of my schoolmates, and the authorities had turned them around, I was devastated, you know, because I had not seen my mother, and I'm pretty sure it was close to 3 weeks or more. And then I guess they gave her clearance, excuse me, to visit me without the students.
Okay.
So she would, you know, come up sometime once a month, sometime twice a month. But the other thing that happened with my mother was that she lost her job. She had to abandon my younger siblings. She had to leave them with family to go elsewhere to support them.
She lost it. What had she been doing by that time?
She
was doing day's work?
No, she was a cook.
Oh, she was cooking. And she actually had to leave Macomb?
She had to leave Macomb in order to...
And the children?
And the children, yes. And two of the places she went was to... down on the coast, Gulf Coast, down by Biloxi and Gulfport. And the other place she went was Jackson, here in Jackson. She was able to find employment here in Jackson.
She did?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I spent 6.5 months in the reformatory school.
Wow. At Oakley?
At Oakley. I was not told, and nor did my attorney have knowledge of the exact... Well, there was no sentencing. There wasn't a trial. There wasn't a hearing. And the best information that he could give me was that I was to stay in the reformatory school until I reached 21. So that would have given me like 5 years.
Really?
In reformatory school. Remember, I was only 16 years old at that time.
Yeah. When
I made my 17th birthday.
In the reformatory?
In the reformatory school.
And so in total you spent how long in the reformatory?
6.5 months.
6.5 months.
I spent 1 month in Pike County Jail and 6.5 months in the reformatory school.
After... Do you know how he actually got out?
Yes, I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
There was this professor from Talladega, Alabama.
Okay.
He came with a couple of the students from Talladega. Mm-hmm. And by the way, one of their names was Avery. And I said I was going because I've lost their names, but I can recognize them if I see them. And I said I was going to make a trip to Talladega to check the yearbooks and stuff to be able to identify these people.
Yes.
Anyway.
What made them come over there?
Well, they came
How
over.
They know about you.
Well, this man Eisman, who I loosely call him my liberator. But he had been following the story.
This was the professor's name?
Yeah.
Eisman?
Herman Eisman. E-I-N-S-M-A-N.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He had been following the story. And he came with the claim of working with... He was German.
Yeah.
And he said that he had worked with the underground movement in Germany to help free the Jews, the German Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he came here to Mississippi after reading my story.
What did he read?
Huh?
Did you ever find out how he read it?
It was in the papers.
Okay.
You know, from the accounts that they had in the papers.
All right.
And I do know that,
Your jailing had made the news.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah. It was written up in various newspapers.
Yes.
Okay, and that's how he discovered about it.
Yes. And I do know that, you know, according to Jack Young, you know, he himself, his hands were kind of tied because he had attempted to get writs of habeas corpus and different legal wranglings to try and spring me from the schools. I think your tape is going out. As I said, that attorney Young.
Jack Young,
senior.
Who got Jack Young for you?
I believe it was the NAACP.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly who he worked for. I just know that he represented me in the case, in the initial case, where I spent the 30 days in Pike County Jail.
Pike County Jail. Right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure, you know, who paid him his salary.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, after this professor came and we went and spoke with Ross Barnett, Governor Ross Barnett.
Oh, Eisman?
Eisman went directly to Ross Barnett and spoke with him. And he was able to convince him to release me into his custody. And he told me that Ross Barnett was a little bit reluctant, but my release was a conditional release. And that was, he would release me into his custody provided he get me out of the state of Mississippi within 24 hours because he could not guarantee my safety. So it was as a result of this action, or the result of being exiled from the state of Mississippi, I went to Alabama, where I lived on campus at Talladega, on campus with Mr. Eisman and his family, and there were some things that happened that were very painful. I didn't stay with him for very long. I'm not going to go into the details of it.
That's up to you, sweetie. I'd love to hear it, but if it's too hard for you, don't worry.
I had to run for my life.
Oh, no. You actually had to run?
Yes.
Off the campus? By yourself?
That was mad, I admit.
Nobody came to get you?
There was nobody to come and get me because the only connections I had were the people here in Mississippi, and I met this family in Alabama. This guy was also a professor, and I can't remember his name, but if I saw him, I would be, you know, as I said, I plan to revisit the campus in Talladega. Okay, I ran to them. And he
said, this other family,
and he inquired of me whether I had anybody that he could call.
Yes.
And I told him yes, to call Jim Foreman, who was the executive director of SNCC.
Right.
And he did.
You had been abused by the Eisman family? Or by members of that family while you were staying with them? Was that what? Or you don't want to talk about it? That's all right. That's terrible. That is absolutely terrible. Mm-hmm. The family that you ran to in Talladega, that was a black family?
Yes.
You went to the home of the other faculty person, right?
Yes.
And you told your story?
Yes.
And then you asked them to contact?
No, he asked me.
He asked you.
If there was anybody that he could contact.
That he could call on your behalf?
Yes.
Right.
And I told him to call Jim Foreman, who was executive director of SNCC. And when he called Jim, Jim told him to do him a favor and put me on a bus to Atlanta. And after he placed me on the bus, he was to go back and call Jim to tell him what time the bus was going to arrive in Atlanta and to tell him how much my fare was so that he could forward it on to back to him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
After this man put me on the bus and sent me to Atlanta, Jim and his wife Mildred met me at the bus station.
In Atlanta.
And about two and a half hours after my arrival in Atlanta, there was a knock upon the door.
Mm-hmm. You went to Jim's house?
I went to Jim's house. They took me to their home. There was a knock upon the door. And Jim said, that's Mr. Eisman. No, he said, that's Herman Eisman.
That had followed you there?
Had driven from
Talladega. Wow.
To Atlanta.
Eisman? By himself.
By himself. And when Jim said that, I was in disbelief.
Wow.
I couldn't believe that, you know. So Jim opened the door, Jim was in front of me, and I was in the middle, and Mildred was behind me, so I was like sandwiched in.
Mm-hmm.
When he opened the door, sure enough, this man was standing at the door with two Atlanta policemen. And the moment he saw my face, he said, arrest this girl. She's a fugitive from justice.
Oh, Eisman did that?
He did that to me.
Ooh.
He did that to me. So Jim was trying to reason with him.
Mm.
And they were ornering back and forth because Jim said, Mr. Eisman, you can't do that. You can't do that. I can and I'm going to, and kept ordering the police
to arrest you.
To arrest me and take me back to the reformatory school in Mississippi. So in order to resolve this, the police said, wait a minute. Young lady, can I speak to you? And I said, yes. So he just took me aside. He said, how old are you? I told him I was 17.
At that time you were 17?
At that time I was 17.
Lord have mercy.
That was my only saving grace. Because in the state of Georgia, at the age of 17, you're no longer considered a minor.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you were able to decide for yourself whether you wanted to go with him or not?
There was no decision to be made. It was decided once I was of legal age in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I was staying in Georgia.
That
I wasn't going
you to
Alabama.
In Georgia.
Yes.
Yeah, right. That allowed you to stay in Georgia.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of hung around in Georgia for a bit, and then come Ella Baker.
Who looked out for you? Ella. Ella looked out for you?
Ella Baker looked out for me.
That's
Ella Baker took me to New York, to her home there. She purchased me some clothes, and she sent me to Palmer Memorial Institute in Sedalia, North Carolina.
Oh, where it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Right. So
I did well in Pommel.
Oh, that's right.
But the other thing, I had difficulties because, you know, having been incarcerated and then in a dormitory environment where you had house mothers and stuff like that and keys dangling and stuff. So I only stayed there for a year.
Mm-hmm. You stayed in North Carolina for a year?
Uh-huh. I stayed in North Carolina for a year. And then I went to North Haven. I met a family.
Well, you know what? I'm lost in terms of time, Brenda. Tell me, well, what year are you now? Is this still, what year is this?
Okay, this was, I left reformatory school in 1962.
Okay, 62. All right.
Okay. And then, okay, let me see.
Oakley was 1962.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I left Oakley in, Oakley was 61, 62, because I went to Oakley in October of 61. And I was released from Oakley in April of 62.
Okay. Got it.
Okay, and then I was with this family in Talladega for approximately 2.5 months.
Okay.
From April to June, I believe it was. April to June.
Mm-hmm. And that's 62?
Yes.
So by the time you got to North Carolina, it's still 1962?
September of 62.
September of 1962. Okay.
Okay, and then I left.
Yeah, you left there.
Uh-huh.
And when?
This was something for the summer months. After I went for the summer, I finished the year there and decided that I don't think I could tolerate going back into that environment again.
Yes, Lord.
I contacted. I used to call her Ma Baker, Mrs. Baker, and I informed her that, I wouldn't be able to return. And I explained to her,
How did you like North Carolina?
It was nice. I liked North Carolina, but I didn't like feeling like I was incarcerated all over again.
Oh, okay.
And that's what it was like, getting up at a certain time having...
Was it sort of a boarding school atmosphere?
It was a boarding school.
Oh, it was a boarding
school. It was a boarding school.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All right.
So they had a routine that you had to adhere to a routine while
yes.
you were there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you stayed there?
I stayed there a year.
1 year?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then you went to?
I went to Illinois for the summer, and I met the Emersons. I met the Emersons at a SNCC convention.
Mm-hmm.
And...
What part of Illinois you went to? Chicago?
I went to Chicago. Well, actually, it was Maywood, which is one of the suburbs of Illinois.
Yeah, Maywood.
Yeah. That was with, what was it, Dr. Vera King Markoven and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to attend there, but then when the Emersons, Ruth Emerson and Tom Emerson, and Tom was a lawyer at Yale University.
Tom Emerson.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas Emerson, he just died a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they invited me into their home.
Mm.
And so I went and lived with them. And I attended North Haven High School. North Haven, Connecticut.
North Haven, Connecticut. North Haven. Did you finish high school?
Yes, I did. And
there?
I finished high school there.
Okay.
I was determined because when we were growing up, mm-hmm. my mother instilled in us the value of getting, you know, she emphasized mm-hmm. the value of getting your high school diploma because that was what was important at that time.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you got your high school diploma, you could go far. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, after getting the diploma, mm-hmm. it's like the rules began to change then, you know, they flipped the script on us, you know, where you then you needed a college degree. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't complete college, I went to college. I went to a business school in Burbank, California.
Burbank?
Uh-huh.
You left New Haven and went all the way to Burbank?
Yeah.
Yeah? Why?
Well, because, okay, to be honest with you, when I graduated from high school, that was the most frightening time of my life.
Why is that?
Because it was like feeling like I wasn't an adult, but I wasn't a child either. And trying to figure out and focus on what I was going to do with the rest of my life.
Okay.
Knowing that I didn't have the cushion mm-hmm. of someone else being responsible for me.
For you.
You know.
You were 19 by that time.
I was, 19 by that time, mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay.
So it was frightening.
Why Burbank, California? I mean, how did you discover Burbank?
Oh, no, some friends. At friends that were in California from Mississippi, and we kind of kept in contact with each other, you know, while I was in high
school. Folks from Pike County?
Folks from Pike County.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Burbank?
No, they were actually in San Fernando or Pacoima.
Oh, Pacoima.
Uh-huh.
I've been there.
Right. So after going there, I decided that, you know, I got to do something. I got to get some kind of skills or something and get mm-hmm. me a serious job and mm-hmm. go to work. Mm-hmm. So I went to Tony Taylor School of Business.
In Burbank?
In Burbank, California.
How you do something? Tony Taylor School. That was a business school?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah.
Burbank, California. Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah, and then after then, you know, I had to get to work and be serious. So I worked there. I mean, I went to school and I worked. And believe it or not, in 66, mm-hmm. it was still difficult for black people, even in the state of California, to get front office jobs.
Sure.
You know,
exactly.
And most people don't believe this.
It's
you know,
true. Yeah.
But it's like having to break down barriers there too.
Exactly. We
okay.
don't have a net.
Mm-hmm. No. And so I after completing Tony Taylor School of Business, I couldn't get a job in my field of training.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked in Lockheed.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, a document clerk, which meant that, you know, when they send out, you know, when they call for different schematics and stuff like that, having to familiarize yourself with the numbers and be able to go and pull these blueprints and schematics.
Did you learn both blueprint reading? Did you learn how to read blueprints?
As Hispanic people say, poquito, very little.
Very little. Okay. Yeah.
Very little. Mm-hmm. But then there were several jobs that I had until I got, you know, where I was comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I also worked at help with health organizations, HMOs.
Oh, okay.
Uh huh. And then I went into California State University, Northridge,
mm-hmm.
where I worked there, and actually until I retired.
Mm-hmm.
I had to take a medical retirement, by the way.
Well?
Yeah, at age of 44.
Mm-hmm.
I took a medical retirement.
Last year.
Year before.
Year before.
I had to take a medical retirement because I have chronic back problems with real bad arthritis and,
oh, really?
And stuff like that. Mm. So I took a medical retirement and while I was at Cal State, I became involved with the union there, and I was the president of the chapter on campus, and then I became an assistant regional director. This is all union activities.
And where were you living then?
I was living in Southern California, in Pacoima, California,
okay.
And that's the address. That, as a matter of fact, I lived there for 20 some years.
Oh.
Okay. So I was, you know, very active with the union and saving people's bacon, saving their jobs and stuff. So then I became an assistant regional director for Region 11 because I worked for California State Employees Association.
Oh.
That was the union, one of the largest unions in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became the assistant regional director, and then after I retired, I became their secretary treasurer until 6 years ago when I moved from the area.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you moved from that area?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And to?
To Apple Valley, California.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. Well, I don't know where it is. Apple Valley.
Okay, it's in Southern California.
Okay.
But in the high desert.
All right.
Okay.
Okay,
of
that's
California.
A little better.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And I think that's enough.
Well, that's...
I'm writing a book, so I have to...
You write
hold, hold some things.
Keep your secrets. Real stuff.
I have to keep that's the real
right.
stuff.
That's what we needed.
Okay. Look here. You know, you hear what he told me? I got what I need, and now I don't need you anymore. Okay, so
I got the story about how you got where you are today. I got that story
all
fairly
right.
well.
All right.
I know there's a lot of in-betweens.
There's lots of in-betweens.
In-between.
A lot of bumpy roads. a lot of tumultuous years.
The essentials I have. Did you ever get married? Did you ever get married? All right, that's not.
No
that's
comment.
Fine. No comment.
I did.
I told you to tell me what you wanted to tell me. And
I got,
if you don't choose to tell me that, that's fine.
I got married, but I also got divorced, too.
That's nothing.
You know,
it happens
so.
Every day.
And it feels good.
It feels good.
It feels good.
Okay. Any children?
No biological children, but I had children.
You adopted a son?
No.
Two kids?
Because you're divorced doesn't mean you're divorced from the children. Yeah. You divorce the man, but you don't divorce the children.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yes, I think I am.
Huh?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're still in contact with each other.
The children?
Yeah.
That's good.
And they still call me Mom. And
well, that's fine.
Especially when they want something.
They want to be independent.
Right.
Until such time.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
As they have a need. Right.
Yeah,
okay,
so.
Miss Brenda. That was nice. I'm glad we did it over.
Okay.
Oops. Those two. Fetch it out. There you go.
Okay.
Is it going?
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
As I said, that attorney Young.
Jack Young.
Jack Young, senior.
Who got Jack Young for you?
I believe it was the NAACP.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly who he worked for. I just know that he represented me in the case, in the initial case,
mm-hmm.
where I spent the 30 days in Pike County Jail.
Pike County Jail, right.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure, you know, who paid him his salary.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, after this... professor came and we went and spoke with Governor Ross Barnett.
Ooh,
Eisman went directly to Ross Barnett and spoke with him and he was able to convince him to release me into his custody. And he told me that Ross Barnett was a little bit reluctant, but my release was a conditional release, and that was he would release me into his custody provided he get me out of the state of Mississippi within 24 hours, because he could not guarantee my safety. So it was as a result of this action, or the result of being exiled from the state of Mississippi, I went to Alabama, where I lived on campus
with,
at Talladega, on campus with Mr. Eisman and his family. And there were some things that happened that were very painful. I didn't stay with him for very long. I'm not going to go into the details of it.
That's up to you, sweetie. I'd love to hear it, but if it's too hard for you, don't worry.
I had to run for my life.
Oh, no. You actually had to run?
Yes.
Off the campus? By yourself?
That was the man I met.
Nobody came to get you?
There was nobody to come and get me, because the only connections I had were the people here in Mississippi. And I met this family in Alabama. This guy was also a professor, and I can't remember his name, but if I saw him, I would be, you know, as I said, I plan to revisit the campus in Talladega. Okay, I ran to them, and he said,
this other family,
and he inquired of me whether I had anybody that he could call.
Yes.
And I told him yes, to call Jim Foreman, who was the executive director of SNCC.
Right.
And he did.
You had been abused by the Eisman family? Or by members of that family while you were staying with them? Was that what? Or you don't want to talk about it? That's all right. That's terrible. That is absolutely terrible. This was the family that you ran to in Talladega, that was a black family?
Yes.
You went to the home of the other faculty person, right?
Yes.
And you told your story?
Yes.
And then you asked them to contact?
No, he asked me.
He asked you.
If there was anybody that he could contact.
That he could call on your behalf?
Yes.
Right.
And I told him to call Jim Foreman, who was executive director of SNCC. And when he called Jim told him to do him a favor and put me on a bus to Atlanta. And after he placed me on the bus, he was to go back and call Jim to tell him what time the bus was going to arrive in Atlanta, and to tell him how much my fare was so that he could forward it on to back to him. And that's what he did. After this man put me on the bus and sent me to Atlanta, Jim and his wife Mildred met me at the bus station.
In Atlanta.
And about two and a half hours after my arrival in Atlanta, there was a knock upon the door.
You went to Jim's house?
I went to Jim's house. They took me to their home. There was a knock upon the door, and Jim said, that's Mr. Eisman. No, he said, that's Herman Eisman.
That had followed you there?
Had driven
from
Talladega. Wow.
To Atlanta.
Eisman himself.
By himself. And when Jim said that, I was in disbelief.
Wow.
I couldn't believe that. Yeah. So Jim opened the door. Jim was in front of me, and I was in the middle, and Mildred was behind me. So I was like sandwiched in.
Mm-hmm.
When he opened the door, sure enough, this man was standing at the door with two Atlanta policemen. And the moment he saw my face, he said, "Arrest this girl. She's a fugitive from justice."
Oh, wait. Eisman did that?
He did that to me.
Ooh.
He did that to me. So, Jim was trying to reason with him.
Mm.
And they were ornering back and forth because Jim said, "Oh, Mr. Eisman, you can't do that. You can't do that." "I can, and I'm going to," and kept ordering the police
to arrest you,
to arrest me and take me back to the reformatory school in Mississippi. In order to resolve this, the police said, wait a minute, "Young lady, can I speak to you?" And I said, "Yes." So he just took me aside. He said, "How old are you?" I told him I was 17.
At that time you were 17?
At that time I was 17.
Lord have mercy.
That was my only saving grace. Because in the state of Georgia, at the age of 17, you're no longer considered a minor.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you were able to decide for yourself whether you wanted to go with him or not?
There was no decision to be made. It was decided once I was of legal age in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I was staying in Georgia.
That
I wasn't going
you to
Alabama.
Stay in Georgia.
Yes.
Yeah, right. That allowed you to stay in Georgia.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of hung around in Georgia for a bit, and then comes Ella Baker.
Who looked out for you? Ella. Ella looked out for you?
Ella Baker looked out for me.
That's
Ella Baker took me to New York, to her home there. She purchased me some clothes, and she sent me to Palmer Memorial Institute in Sedalia, North Carolina.
Oh, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Right. So, I did well in Palmer.
Oh, that's right.
But the other thing, I had difficulties because, having been incarcerated and then in a dormitory environment where you had house mothers and stuff like that and keys dangling and stuff. So I only stayed there for a year.
Mm-hmm. You stayed in North Carolina for a year?
Uh-huh. I stayed in North Carolina for a year. And then I went to North Haven. I met a family.
Well, you know what? Emerson. I'm lost in terms of time, Brenda. Tell me, what year are you now? Is this still, what year is this?
Okay, this was, I left reformatory school in 1962.
Okay, 62. All right.
And then, let me see.
Oakley was 1962.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I left Oakley was 61, 62, because I went to Oakley in October of 61. And I was released from Oakley in April of 62.
Okay. Oh, I got it.
Okay. And then I was with this family in Talladega for approximately 2.5 months.
Okay.
From April to June, I believe it was. April to June.
And that's 62?
Yes.
So by the time you got to North Carolina, it's still 1962?
September of 62.
September. 1962. Okay.
Okay, and then I left.
Yeah, you left there.
Uh-huh.
And went?
To I went, well, this was something for the summer months, after I went for the summer, after I, you know, I finished the year there, mm-hmm. and decided that I couldn't, I don't think I could, you know, tolerate going back mm-hmm. into that environment again.
Yes, Lord.
I, you know, contacted, I used to call her Ma Baker, Mrs. Baker, you know, and I informed her that, you know, I wouldn't be able to return. And I explained to her, you know, excuse me.
How did you like North Carolina?
It was nice. I liked North Carolina, but I didn't like feeling like I was incarcerated all over again.
Oh, okay.
And that's what it was like, you know, mm-hmm. getting up at a certain time, and, you know, having...
Was it sort of a boarding school atmosphere?
It was a boarding school.
Oh, it was a boarding
school. It was a boarding school.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So they had a routine that you had to adhere to a routine while
yes.
you were there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you stayed there?
I stayed there a year.
1 year?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then you went to?
I went to Illinois for the summer, and I met the Emersons. I met the Emersons at a SNCC convention.
Mm-hmm.
And
what part of Illinois did you went to? Chicago?
I went to Chicago. Well, actually, it was Maywood, which is one of the suburbs of mm-hmm. Illinois.
Yeah, Maywood.
Yeah.
Maywood.
That was with, who was it? Dr. Vera King Markoven and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to attend there, but then when the Emersons, Ruth Emerson and Tom Emerson, and Tom was a lawyer at Yale University.
Tom Emerson.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas Emerson, he just died a couple of years ago. Uh-huh. Anyway, they invited me into their home.
Mm.
And so I went and lived with them. And I attended North Haven High School.
In
North Haven, Connecticut.
North Haven, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
North Haven. And did you finish high school?
Yes, I did.
There?
I finished high school there.
Okay.
I was determined because when we were growing up,
mm-hmm.
my mother instilled in us the value of getting, you know, she emphasized
mm-hmm.
the value of getting your high school diploma because that was what was important at that time.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you got your high school diploma, you could go far. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, after getting the diploma, it's like the rules began to change then, you know, they flipped
yeah.
the script on us, you know, where you needed a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I didn't complete college, I went to college. I went to a business school in Burbank, California.
Burbank?
Uh-huh.
You left New Haven and went all the way to Burbank?
Yeah.
Yeah? Why?
Well, because, okay. To be honest with you, when I graduated from high school, that was the most frightening time of my life.
Why is that?
Because it was like feeling like I wasn't an adult, but I wasn't a child either. And trying to figure out and focus on what I was going to do with the rest of my life.
Okay.
Knowing that I didn't have the cushion of someone else being responsible for me.
For you.
You know.
You were 19 by that time.
I was, yeah, 19 by that time, mm-hmm. yeah.
Okay.
So it was frightening.
Why Burbank, California? I mean, how did you discover Burbank?
Oh, no, some friends, at friends that were in California from Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
And we kind of kept in contact with each other, you know, while I was in high school.
Folks from Pike County?
Folks from Pike County.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Burbank.
No, they were actually in San Fernando
okay.
or Pacoima.
Oh, La Jolla. I've been there.
Right. So after going there, I decided that, you know, I got to do something. I got to get some kind of skills or something and get me a serious job and go to work. So I went to Tony Taylor School of Business.
In Burbank?
In Burbank, California.
How do you do something? Tony Taylor School. That was a business school?
Yes.
Burbank, California. Well, I'll be doggone.
Yeah, and then after then, you know, I had to get to work and be serious. So I worked there, I mean, I went to school and I worked, and believe it or not, in when I went in 66, it was still difficult for black people, even in the state of California, to get front office jobs.
Sure,
you know?
Exactly.
And most people don't believe this.
It's
you
true.
Know? Yeah. But it's like having to break down barriers there, too.
Exactly. We
okay.
don't have them there.
Mm-hmm. No. And so, I, after completing Tony Taylor School of Business, I couldn't get a job in my training, in my field of training.
Mm-hmm.
So, I worked in Lockheed.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. And, you know, a document clerk, which meant that, you know, when they send out, you know, when they call for different schematics and stuff like that, having to familiarize yourself with the numbers and be able to go and pull these blueprints and schematics.
Did you learn both blueprint reading? Did you learn how to read blueprints?
As the Hispanic people say, poquito, very little.
Very little. Okay.
Very little. But then there were several jobs that I had until I got, you know, where I was comfortable. I also worked at you know, help with health organizations, HMOs.
Oh, okay.
And then I went into California State University, Northridge, where I worked there, and actually until I retired. I had to take a medical retirement, by the way.
Oh?
Yeah. At age of 44, I took a medical retirement.
Last year.
I had to take a medical retirement because I have chronic back problems with real bad arthritis and,
oh, really?
And stuff like that. So I took a medical retirement and while I was at Cal State, I became involved with the union there, and I was the president of the chapter on campus, and then I became an assistant regional director. This is all union activities.
And where were you living then?
I was living in Southern California, in in Pacoima, California.
Okay.
And that's the address that, as a matter of fact, I lived there for 20 some years.
Oh.
Okay. So I was, you know, very active with the union and saving people's bacon, saving their jobs and stuff. So. Then I became an assistant regional director for Region 11 because I worked for California State Employees Association.
Oh.
That was the union, one of the largest unions in the country. And so I became the assistant regional director. And then after I retired, I became their secretary treasurer. Until 6 years ago when I moved from the area.
Okay, you moved from that area?
Yes.
And to?
To Apple Valley, California.
I don't know what that is. Well, I don't know where it is, Apple Valley.
Okay, it's in Southern California.
Okay.
But in the high desert.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, that's
California.
A little better. All right.
And I think that's it though.
Well,
I'm writing a book, so I have to
write
hold some things.
Keep your secret. Real stuff.
I have to keep that's the real right. stuff.
That's what we needed.
Okay. Look here. You hear what he told me? I got what I need, and now I don't need you anymore. Okay, so.
I got the story about how you got where you are today. I got that story
all
fairly
right.
well.
All right.
I know there's a lot of in-between.
There's lots of in-between. A lot of bumpy roads. A lot of tumultuous years.
The essentials I have. Did you ever get married? All right, that's not.
No
that's
comment.
Fine. No comment.
I did.
I told you to tell me what you wanted to tell me. And if you don't choose to tell me that, that's fine.
I got married, but I also got divorced, too.
That's nothing.
You know,
it happens
so.
Every day.
And it feels good. It feels good.
Okay. Any children?
No biological children, but I had children.
You adopted a son?
No.
Took care of them.
Because you're divorced doesn't mean you're divorced from the children. Yeah. You divorce the man, but you don't divorce the children.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yes, I think I am.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we're still in contact with each other.
The children?
Yeah.
That's good.
And they still call me Mom. And
well, that's fine.
Especially when they want something.